Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home. They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's
world service.
That's... Yeah. They have asked for that, really.
Well, you can laugh. I want to walk up.
I'm a little bit of an idealist. But having said that, I want to be like me.
You don't know what you're talking about.
What have you
known?
I'd like to stay alive for 6 days.
I'd say it to your face, not say it to now.
I'll come down Twanfield and we'll see them, won't we?
What you doing down here, you shawny man?
Another day, another cycle out to Abbottstown for Ken Early, who must now possess the most impressive calf muscles in all of football journalism, with all due respect to Jonathan Northcroft.
Oh, I'm sure around.
What's going on?
Well, it takes more than, you know, a few days of cycling to build up impressive calf muscles. In fact, I don't know if it even, you know, how long would it take? You have to be going up some hills.
Listen, I mean, I thought the opening link was pretty good, but I mean, sure,
I thought you were disputing Jonathan Northcroft's calves, and I don't know what they're like. I'm just assuming it's
Is hewn from granite.
I have the vision of him tearing past you on the Old Trafford sod a number of years ago.
Right.
So I figured, you know, it's powered by Jack Grealish size.
You've had a very healthy last few days, Ken, is what we're saying. I mean, if in 6 months' time we look at your calves and we're like, you can't even get into your linen trousers, such as the size of your calves, we'll look back on this day, on this period, and say this has been the turning point. This is, you know, what's revolutionized your body.
Little cycle out. Yeah, exactly. Archie Rintoul on the show today to talk about Germany, who scored the second fastest ever goal in international football on their way to beating France 2-0. That was a goal on 8 seconds, 2 seconds slower than Christoph Baumgartner for Austria against Slovakia earlier the same day. That's Christoph Baumgartner of RB Leipzig and not Felix Baumgartner, the Red Bull fella who jumped from space.
I remember the lad.
There might have been a typo in an earlier version of an Irish Times article.
Is it a typo when you just... I did attribute the quickest ever goal in international football to Felix Baumgartner, the Red Bull daredevil.
Ah, well.
Who, I suppose, is another...
He's a high-performing athlete.
Achievement.
Yeah, no, that is true, yeah. I did a gig once where I was interviewing Felix Baumgartner.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You've met Felix?
No, it was Zoom, or it was whatever the precursor to Zoom was.
Skype.
Skype, I don't know, one of these ones.
Yeah.
Well, it was Google. It was a Google Hangout. So,
okay.
I mean, Google would have been heavily involved in this link-up, I would have thought.
You and Felix.
Yeah.
Did you get cheers for that one on, or did they pay you cash?
Felix wasn't in good form.
No.
Oh, well, unless he reacts to my questions the way he reacts to everybody's questions. I don't think so. I just presume it was a bad day.
Mm.
Let's just say I'm glad David Coulthard was beside him, because Coulthard never delivers anything less than 100%
David
on a corporate
Coulthard,
gig.
Felix Baumgartner and Old McEvan.
There were a few others involved as well, but yeah, that was...
You dodged my question about shares or cash.
Oh, no, it's obviously massive share holding now in Google, yeah.
Oh, good man.
Yeah.
I'm happy to hear it.
No. If you want to hear coverage of the Republic of Ireland versus Switzerland this week, sign up now on secondcaps.com for £5 a month plus VAT. Our manager will be John O'Shea for that match, of course, Ken, as it was on Saturday, and as it may well be for a period of time thereafter.
Hey, let's just say I wouldn't be surprised. I really wouldn't be surprised. John O'Shea, I thought, did... I mean, first of all, the game obviously was... It sort of depends, you know, on your perspective, right? If you were a fan of the game, the main thing you would have been thinking about is, I'm freezing.
It was cold. It was cold.
You were a fan of the game.
I went. I also realised quite early on, I've gone a layer too little here. You know?
I
was wearing a T-shirt, then the long sleeve Ireland jersey, which I bought on sale at the end of last year. And I'm not stumping up whatever. It was 140 quid for the new one.
I mean,
oh, well, 140 quid if you want the like kit, the players, the players fit. No, the, for the men's jersey, but for but player fit. Now I don't know exactly what the difference is between that and the 95 euro kind of standard replica jersey. I don't know.
Maybe it's part of Castore's technology-defying sweat-wicking technology that you see working well, so well at Aston Villa. Really,
there was no need to employ that technology on Saturday, Ken. The jersey, there was there wasn't a bead of sweat on me. So I had a short sleeve T-shirt, a second captain's T-shirt, actually.
Yeah.
Then a long sleeve but quite thin soccer jersey over that.
Yeah.
And then just a very light jacket, no gloves. I did bring a hat. Thankfully.
You must have been absolutely freezing on. I had double wool. I had two woolen cardigans, which I brought out as I sat in the press box.
Like two cardigans.
Two woolen cardigans. I was like Shackleton.
You must have looked ridiculous.
No, I had a coat on over it. It wasn't a big deal. I wished I brought gloves because my fingers... I started to lose...
Ken wears his coat in studio on warm days.
I was losing a feeling in my fingers when at halftime I came out and it was like... The just behind the stand, you know where the food is. People just like wolfing like fistfuls of chips. Yeah. You know, I was like, oh wow! And
just
you could
the
see,
same warp.
You could see it was for they were. Yeah, I was like, I would like some chips. But and then some guy who was leaving, the same guy, and I mentioned him here before.
Oh yeah, a guy left. He was just leaving Kenny games. He's leaving again at halftime.
It was the last game. It was like I think New Zealand, and he was leaving at halftime.
I admire his commitment that he keeps coming, keeps bringing the family, and then sacking it off at halftime.
Keeps lashing out the. This guy's got money to burn, you know. This guy, but and he said like I actually thought they were playing quite well. It's just too cold. I can't do it. Fair enough, you know. So I think that's what a lot of people probably felt. I mean, there was 38,000 people there, which was 10,000 less than the previous Belgium friendly, which was 2 years ago. So if you remember, 2 years ago we played a friendly doubleheader at the same time of the year, Belgium and Lithuania. Mm-hmm. This time it's Belgium, Switzerland. Switzerland probably a bit more, you know.
Yeah.
Where they, we've got, we have football heritage with Switzerland.
Europe's ninth best team.
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty useful.
Yeah.
But they sold the tickets separately that time. And there was 48,000 at the Belgium game. Only 38,000 they announced. I thought it was less. It looked like it less looked to less. Me. But 38,000 was the official figure. So you've lost 10,000 fans 2 years later. And a lot of people were connecting this to the fact they were selling the tickets as a double.
It was absurd. It was
package.
It was absolutely absurd. And a word from our country cousins as well. The idea that you would have to say if you're coming from Galway, if you wanted to go to this Belgian game, you'd then also have to say, right, well, it's either a sunk cost and I'll pay 150 quid for my ticket to go see Belgium or whatever, or I'll have to do this all over again on Tuesday night. Taking on board petrol or hotel expenses or whatever. Wow. I mean, it is.
Have you considered setting up one of those farmers' parties?
No, I haven't, Ken. But I
forgotten
do.
People.
I mean, I do find it interesting that your immediate reaction to the idea of a football fan not living in Dublin is like hilarious.
No, it's my immediate reaction.
These people don't exist, do they? Why don't they just move to Dublin?
You're saying,
all the football is here in Dublin, so why don't they just move to Dublin?
Your whole frame. See how angry he is. Your whole framing of it is so negative. I have to do this all over again. I have to go and watch it. I thought you said this guy was a football fan. I thought you said there's a football fan not want to go.
There are limits to people's finances.
I agree.
And ability to take time off work and so on.
I agree. Fundamentally, I agree.
It is absolutely absurd.
It would have been better. And you can now buy single tickets for the Switzerland game.
Yeah, which I think a lot of people have had anticipated coming. I mean, a lot of people maybe didn't anticipate that. But, you know, my brother and my nephew are coming up from Athenry tomorrow. But, like, they literally couldn't buy tickets to this game until yesterday morning.
Yeah.
I mean, it's bizarre. It is actually bizarre.
And I wonder, is there anyone out there who bought Belgium tickets just because they wanted to go to see Fabian Scherer's boys?
Maybe.
How'd they be feeling?
If they'd held tight and they could have got the single tickets this morning.
Yeah.
How would you be feeling?
I would say you probably should have seen it coming.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say that. The FAI weren't telling you.
Yeah.
So
there's a Bible story about it. Mm-hmm. The parable of the vineyard workers.
What happens there?
It's the one where the guy, he's hiring a lot of people to work in the vineyard. Mm-hmm. Vineyard. And he goes down and he picks up a, you know, you, come on. And they're working away. And then a couple of hours later, he says, oh, you know, we need more. Go down and get more lads.
Yeah.
And he goes down at like 12 o'clock. The sun is up at this stage, blistering. And you come on. And they go up and they're working, toiling, digging, sweating, you know, in the vineyard. And then at 3 o'clock, he's like, we're going to need more. You know, in order to get it finished by sundown, we need more. And gets more. And then, you know, at like 5 o'clock, he's like, we need more. And each time goes down and gets another group. And then it's like the sun sets or whatever, and it's time to, you know, give the guys their wages. And they're giving everyone like a denarius. I don't know, whatever. They're giving everyone the same. And obviously the guys at the start are like, hang on, we came here, we worked all day, these guys showed up 5 minutes to go, you know, picked up a shovel, put it back down, they've got paid the same as us. This is a joke. And the guy says, what are you complaining about? And they said, well, I mean, we just explained what we're, yeah. You know, we've like worked all day and sweated in the sun and you're just paying everyone the same amount. And he's like, did you or did you not agree to work for that deal at the start?
Yeah.
And they were like, well, yeah, we did. And he's like, well, then get out of here. And that's the end of the story.
Yeah. So what is the parable? I mean, that's just a load of shit that happened. I don't know what the I just don't know what the point is.
The parable, the meaning is that, you know, even if you are to come to Christ late in life. Right at the very end. Say you've spent your whole life stealing from people, murdering,
drinking, corrupt,
pillaging, and all that. The whole lot. And then you say at the end, actually, please accept. I accept you into my heart,
okay,
Christ.
Yeah.
Then you will be just the same in His eyes as someone who has been, you know, praying, fasting the whole way along.
Gotcha. Okay. No. That's fair enough.
I did a day's work on a vineyard once again.
Yeah,
I was just going through my old jobs here today.
Did you get a fair day's wage for a fair day's work?
Fair day's wage for an unfair day's work. Oh, I was so bad at the job I was given that halfway through at lunchtime, the fucking dude goes, just go home. We don't need you for the second half. I'll pay you for the day.
I'll pay you to leave.
Just leave.
What were you doing?
Kind of wrap it. It was quite an intricate job. You're wrapping those vines around like the metal wire thing and sort of stapling them out or putting a little you know, just kind of getting them in there. It's quite knacky work. I'm not the most dexterous and the people who worked on it on a regular basis they'd be five rows gone and I'd be still halfway through my first row trying to get this done here. But listen, I got paid for the day, can't complain.
I
love that hustle on.
Yeah, no, it's good.
Did you head off somewhere else and be so bad
at get a second
job in the afternoon that you also got a full day of pay for that?
So I don't know what when they sold it separately, the Lithuania game was 32,000. So I suppose the first game got 38, second game 32. This time it's the first game 38, and we'll see what happens tomorrow against Switzerland now that they're selling single tickets. The game, I thought the atmosphere wasn't great. Like, I mean,
it's a friendly with an interim manager. I mean, come on, let's not worry too much about the atmosphere.
Hey, why not worry about the atmosphere? I'm talking about atmosphere. I'm talking about
what Ireland friendly have you ever been at where there's been an amazing atmosphere?
Ireland against Belgium 2 years ago.
Was it an amazing atmosphere? You just said there were more people there.
It wasn't.
Also, it was a 2-2 game as opposed to a 0-0. So again,
hey, well, you know, 0-0, 2-2. There's not much difference there, on apart from four goals.
Four goals scored, lots of excitement.
Nil-all's a perfect game on.
It sounded a bit like a kind of a semi-busy shopping centre, and you could hear babies crying and this kind of thing. You know,
that was just the Ferguson penalty miss, though.
the anthem. I'm sorry, I have to say, I don't like it.
Do you not like the fact there's a singer?
No.
Oh, yeah.
We have to stop doing
a friend
this.
Of mine was saying the same point.
I couldn't believe
it. Everyone is just allowed to sing it rather than having someone sing it.
Well, it's just...
She does a good job of singing.
And it's not her fault. I've nothing... She's a very fine singer.
Lisa Lamb. To
give Lisa Lamb. But why are we doing this still? I kind of assumed that would have been a 2023 thing, you know? It's just a vibe killer. You know, it's like the anthem is not a song that, like, it's not some soulful crooning, you know, it's a boom, 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 boom.
Get
boom,
the band.
Get the drums.
Get the band involved. It needs it. As a song, it needs it.
It does. Like, I mean, that's the whole point of the song. Yeah. But so that was okay. So what about the game? The game was actually quite good, you know?
From an Irish point of view, got to be happy enough.
am I doing my thing now again of just boosting up, just pretending that it was what was terrible was good? Maybe. We have to say at the beginning, this was not the Belgium are the fourth ranked team in the world. They were missing a few of the players that have, you know, that have helped to put them there. Let's say, obviously, De Bruyne wasn't there. Lukaku, who was the top scorer in European qualifying, did not play. You know, and it was like a lot of their kind of the classic Belgian golden generation. Courtois, obviously, their keeper's injured. Although the substitute keeper, one of their substitute keepers saved a penalty. You know, so it wasn't a top yeah. Belgian team. Nevertheless, they are obviously, have the Euros coming up. This is a serious game for them. And they got absolutely nothing out of Ireland, which is like, I mean, literally, they had the one chance, the Meunier chance. That was the one time where they actually opened up Ireland in the entire 90 minutes. The only other chance they had was in the first half when Trossard kind of turned Ogbene and crossed, and Tielemans had a header, which he could have scored, but it wasn't like it was a clear chance. And he actually had a... Tielemans is not known for his incredible heading ability, and he headed this one tamely wide. And other than that, you're looking at absolutely nothing. Like, that's phenomenal for Ireland. You know, that just... That does not happen very often with us, where you could say they got nothing out of us. Whereas we had numerous chances, which we missed. Now, from the point of view of a coach, I mean, I was talking about fans being cold and like eating chips and probably being bored for a lot of it. From the point of view of a coach who's making his debut at this level as a manager, this was brilliant. And when O'Shea came in afterwards, honestly, he was absolutely, like, his whole vibe was so different, you know, from, like, he's sitting there in the press conference sort of, oh, yeah, you know, kind of John O'Shea or whatever.
Pre-match press conference.
During the week, you know.
Yeah, there's no great performance to it or a great buzz.
No, there's not that much to talk about. And he's not like, in the habit of, like, hyping things up, you know, and sort of doing a McGregor on it or whatever. He's, more kind of level-headed type of attitude. But after this game, he was really kind of energized. You know what I mean? He was kind of really, like, you could see he was sort of thinking about, like, he was kind of rerunning the game in his head. He was really into it. And I thought was very impressive, actually, when he spoke after the game. I thought he said a lot of things which made sense in terms of his analysis of the game. You know, what he was saying about what he had wanted his team to do had been borne out by what we had just seen.
Which,
you know what I mean?
Odd.
Well, he talked about different things. He talked about essentially, you know, being compact in defense, which we were. Like, I mean, we were kind of playing 5-4-1 a lot of the time when they had the ball. But also being pressing aggressively, which we obviously did, especially in the first half. He talked about the two sixes as being the key to the whole system. Which I thought was interesting because it's the Xabi Alonso thing, right? This is you remember Xhaka talking about Alonso. This is the fundamental thing of his system, is we have two Xabi Alonsos. Right? Xabi Alonso's like, how would I like to play? Imagine there was two players a bit like me and they kind of are going to...
They're never going to be quite as good as me, thinks Xabi Alonso, but I'm going to be too polite to say that.
Good, but, you know, they can still, you know...
I'll coach them to be their best version of themselves, Xabi Alonso.
If I tell them to do that.
What's better than a team with me in it? A team with two me's.
Two sixes he'd done. So this was the player, maybe Smallbone was the player that O'Shea had been talking about before the game, where he was saying, he had been telling one of the players, look, versatility, a little bit of adaptability isn't a bad thing. Maybe it was Smallbone, because Smallbone was playing in a pretty disciplined, like defensive midfield or holding midfield role. Although he still... you know, was able to get forward enough to set up two of our chances. One was a little pass for Ogbene, which Ogbene, I remember, kind of slashed it across goal in the first half. And the second one, he passed it on to Smodic, who had a decent chance, which was blocked. I thought he had a good game, actually. But really, the idea was for those two to not be sort of, to stay close to each other and to protect the team, as O'Shea put it. That worked well. He went obviously with three centre backs. I mean, when the team was announced, there was, they were showing it. I don't know who produces the graphic first, but they definitely had showed it on like Virgin. And I was sort of going around that it was like a 4-3-3 with Nathan Collins in the in the, you know, in midfield, which obviously was not what they were doing. You can see in the warm up that Collins was sort of with the central defenders. So Collins, Omar Bamdali and O'Shea. Yeah. So these five players are kind of your defensive five, and the wing backs who are Coleman and Brady. Now he picked Coleman and Brady, who are two of the two oldest players in the squad, in this kind of wing back role. And I think that has a lot to do with the sort of team chemistry in terms of the personality of the team, rather than necessarily the technical or, you know,
the specifics of that role that are required.
Yeah, and that's the one thing that I would think about this type of system. That we might struggle a little bit with in terms of attacking, because I was making the comparison to the Alonso thing. Now you could say, well, this is ridiculous. You're comparing Ireland to Bayer Leverkusen. Are you insane? What are you talking about? Right. But it is a fact that Leverkusen played this system that we were trying to play the other day. And they obviously have had a pretty successful season, 38 games, zero defeats. They're destroying everybody. Right. Whereas I think the issue with this system sometimes is you can get stuck into you've got five defenders, then you've got your two midfielders also defending, and your forwards are kind of isolated. And O'Shea talked about this as well. He talked about how important it was that we had spoken beforehand about how we can't have a situation where three of them, their front three or three Belgian players, are pinning back five of our players. You have to be able to have the wing backs joining in the attack, and this you do by you've got a back five, but the idea is kind of that they will shuttle around the side of the pitch, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So the wing back is pushed in as a winger, and the central defender, you know, the right central defender, which would have been Bamdali, is kind of moved into his position. See, so they're kind of sliding around this way. This is the kind of idea that O'Shea was talking about, which I thought was interesting. I do think that you need to have one of the reasons why Leverkusen, there are a lot of reasons why they have succeeded, but one of the reasons that their wingbacks are absolutely brilliant. You know, they've got this guy Grimaldo, who's just having a sensational season for them, who is like a kind of I don't know who to really compare him to, but he's scoring like a lot of goals, he's like their second top scorer, second top assister. And on the other side, they've got Frimpong, who's like also the second top joint. They've all got 11 goals, and the third top assister. So these are like the really key attackers in the team. And without players of, you know, who can do that in this type of position, the system struggles to.
That's going to be the same in any system,
goals.
Though.
Yeah.
We don't have players of the quality that Bayer Leverkusen are going to have. So
no.
you nearly have to just chalk that down. You could, in terms of I actually thought Seamus Coleman did well. You know, he's 35 years of age.
No, he did. Seamus Coleman did do well.
He binned off Trossard at halftime. They're basically their two best players. And Doku comes on, tries to have a go a few times early on. Coleman hacks him down a bit and then keeps complaining when he gets called for freeze.
Yeah. It was a tremendous performance.
Kept him relatively quiet.
I mean, I would have taken up a little bit on that's the deal with any formation. I mean, you do have to try and pick a formation that suits your players as well. And this particular formation the wingbacks we played last Saturday, and actually it's not like we're missing people necessarily that have that skill set to replace those two lads either. You know, it does seem like a system that could work, but also we can't sign Frimpong, you know what I mean? We do have to cut our cloth to measure as well.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm sure there's going to be a change, because I think it would be a lot to ask Seamus Coleman to play again on Tuesday, you know what I mean? He will play, I suppose, at some point, but like to do 90 minutes, he did do 90 minutes, didn't he?
There were a lot of subs near the end, I can't quite remember all the substitutes.
Yeah. To do 90 minutes again might be, you
I mean, long term you could play Ogbene at right wing back, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
he certainly have the engine to keep getting. I was kind of hoping for a bit more from the. I like Coleman and Ogbene together. I just think they're two. Well, you know, we know how good Coleman's been over the years, and I think it could work well with Ogbene. Didn't quite. The advantage of wing back is Ogbene has more space to run into.
Yeah.
Than sometimes where he was playing the other day, he's trying to get the ball on the turn and all that kind of stuff, and not necessarily having what we want to see him have, which is just a few yards of space to get into there.
Yeah, I mean, Abisele came on towards the end, and he actually had a couple of moments where he could have done, he had a couple of moments to do a bit better than he did, but like, you know, he also is a player, I mean, he's obviously, what is he, 20, 22, 21 years old. You know what I mean? Like, he's right at the beginning of his career and could maybe develop into the kind of player we're talking about for that part in the system. So, yeah, I mean, overall, I thought it was great. Like, great is you know, it's fucking nil all against Belgium. Yeah. But, like, from O'Shea's point of view, you can see why he was excited about it. Like, the team did what he wanted. They executed it really well. They gave nothing away. They should have won. They should, like, you know, we created the chances to win. I mean, I'm talking about Coleman not having... I haven't even said that he hasn't, that he didn't contribute in attack. It's just, I think it's unrealistic to expect that he could do this type of thing that you see those Leverkusen wingbacks doing, because he's 35. Like, it's impossible to, for 90 minutes to be up and down in the way that you have to do this. But he should have scored. He should have had a goal after a couple of minutes when he was the free player on the far side that Agbene didn't square it to. When, you know, there was that nice little move, Smodics put the ball through for Agbene, and a square ball is a tap in for Coleman. So that would have been obviously great. I mean, would have been, could have, should have, you know, could have, should have. Ferguson's penalty was a disaster. He slipped when he kicked it.
His header, I thought he could have kept the header down.
Header should have scored.
Just wanted to score one and get going again.
That was another interesting moment though as well, because that was that was like a programmed move from the kickoff.
Yeah, it was nice.
Which, I mean, okay, that's good. Have we been doing that?
That's how those goals after 6 and 8 seconds in other matches we've talked about have been also scored. Pre-programmed moves. The Germany one, they're different. Actually, the Austria one, it's just a tip-off.
He just ran through everyone.
Well, I mean, listen, the man can jump from space. He can obviously run through a few defenders. He just takes the ball from kickoff, gets a little pass, and then off he goes. There were more intricacies involved in the Germany one where, I don't know, was it Kroos? Kroos kind of takes the ball, is given the kickoff, turns around, is always going to tap an easy ball backwards, and spins around and chips a sort of mid-length ball into whoever the goal scorer was. Yeah, who just basically bombs on then and rifles it in. So yeah, we nearly pulled one off there early in the second half with that one, which would have been nice. Smodics was involved in that one, I think. I thought Smodics was...
I thought he was good.
I thought he did enough to be player of the match, to be honest. Normally, when a player's making his debut, everyone looks... If he does anything half decent, he gets it. And I actually thought he did plenty. He looked like... He has a good habit of deciding what he wants to do early and then doing it. You know what I mean? Yeah. He'll do the turn, he'll give it early and go.
He's got a bit of conviction about it.
A bit of conviction about him, I like it. Yeah, no, I think it was a promising debut.
Yeah, there was some nice little passes from him, both short and long, you know, and he kind of can run with the ball and then release the ball. So yeah, it was good. I mean, I'm sort of looking forward to seeing how it goes tomorrow night.
But what about the longer term? So you're out today with John O'Shea, who I presume is being asked about the job long term and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, we hear that Gavin Cooney is asking him here.
Mark Hannon was fairly clear with us a few weeks ago that, you know, you're the interim boss and there's someone coming in April. Has anything changed in the last couple of weeks from your point of view?
Not from my point of view, no, Gavin. As I said, the main focus has been on these two games to really... get that experience in terms of leading a team, organising staff, organising training, players, the whole surroundings about it, getting that experience under my belt, and I really enjoyed it.
Do you feel now, even if it's not with Ireland immediately, do you feel you're ready to be a number one now on a permanent basis?
Yeah, that you hope, because you have to come a point where that's why I went about it this way, in terms of getting that experience under my belt with different managers, different ideas, and then to ultimately... Take the chance to do it myself. But look, as I've always said, it's every scenario presents a different picture, presents a different opportunity. Whatever happens next will happen.
Using the journalist's first name, that's going to endear straight away.
In fact, I do like John O'Shea.
We had an email in from Shane Fitzgerald about Gus Poyet last week. Obligatory, loved the show and have been a member for many years. However, I'm finding some of the Ireland manager talk maddening, the apathy of all to the suggestion that Gus Poyet get the job. A guy whose team dismantled us twice with a similar standard of players not long ago, competed well with France and had a 5-0 win in their playoff to go along with it. He actually seems to want the job also. To your guests and Ken last week, another shot in the dark at people with no managerial experience, like John O'Shea, seems preferable. Less puff pieces for journalists to write about with Gus Poyet, perhaps? I'd say Gus might learn a few first names as well.
I'd say there'd be no shortage of content with Gus, actually.
Yeah, and I think he would be quite good for the media.
I don't think he's going to fall down in terms of content. I mean, it's just... I know what you're saying, and he is an experienced manager in the sense that he has had a lot of jobs and he's been doing it for a long time. And there's no denying that Greece did destroy Ireland when we played them in the qualifiers. This is all true. But I don't think really when you look at his record, it's like, wow, you know, like this guy's done. You know,
his overall career record.
Yeah, yeah, you know, I don't know if
the best thing he might have done in the last 5 years is beat us home and away, which, you know, sure, is eye-catching for us, but it's not exactly the sort of thing that's going to...
Walloped Kazakhstan 5-0 there last week.
Mm.
Kazakhstan is a big country. Do you know that? It's big. Now it's full of mountains and, you know, nuclear power stations that have been left to rot. But nevertheless, it's a very large country.
It
that's
is.
True. On
Kazakhstan
right.
is big. I mean, and he obviously knows John O'Shea. You know, he managed him for a couple of years at Sunderland. I guess there's, you know,
could be a dream team there. Can Poyet be number two now? Or can John O'Shea be number two now?
O'Shea
is that a taste of number
Poyet
one?
Poyet just co-managing with Kerr advising them.
Might be a few too many cooks in that one. Few too many strong
many
voices.
Hands on the tiller.
Yeah.
But like my point is that I don't think it's a record that you look at and go, wow, this guy, yeah, this, you know, definitely. I think he's kind of a... he's fine. Like, he's an average enough manager. Like, in the sense, people use the word average as though it, like, is insulting. But what I'm saying is, like, he's there in the middle of the normal distribution. He's about par for a manager, you know? He comes in, he stays for a year or two, he leaves, and they get another manager
in. I don't think even Gus Poyet would argue with this characterization.
Yeah, so I don't really see that. I think, I don't know, this O'Shea thing is interesting, and I appreciate there's the lack of experience and so on, but there's only one way to kind of get experience, ultimately. Mm. Like, you're not necessarily, I don't think you're betting on a guy who has no experience, because you are, in the sense that he has no experience of doing the job at this level. He hasn't done it, apart from the other night. But he is somebody who you know to be like a capable individual. Who has, you know, massive experience of the top level of the professional game at like for a really long time. So it's not like he doesn't know his arse from his elbow, is what I'm saying, Alan.
Yeah, it is risky. But Will, you're talking like Will Smallbone, Ken. When you hear from different managers that haven't maybe been there or played, it's different to when you speak to somebody like a John O'Shea that has been there at the top level for many years and he knows exactly what you guys are thinking through as players.
Yeah. Well, politic from Smallbone, sure, you know. But, like, I do think, maybe. I mean, what I'm saying is if, say, for example, it was Poyet that was their big April announcement, how would you feel about it? I'd be kind of like, what's the point of this? Mm. Why not just have, like, Sagnol, you know, who is Sagnol?
Are Georgia and Greece playing tomorrow evening for like a place in the Euros, and the loser gets our job?
We didn't even discuss the Sagnol story when it came up, because, well, personally, I'm just like, oh, another one. At some stage, you have to just stop biting at every single name that comes up. But I know the one you don't bite at, which is maybe Sagnol, is the one who gets announced then.
Yeah, but if you look at Sagnol, it's like Sagnol. I mean, I said who is Sagnol. So I know who Willy Sagnol is. I remember him as a player. He was a French international. He played for Bayern Munich. Yeah, he won the Bundesliga lots of times. He won the Champions League with Bayern, I'm pretty sure. He didn't win a tournament with France because he was... Unless he was in Euro 2000, which I don't think he made, but you know he was part of a strong French. He's a you know what he is. He's like a French John O'Shea. Mm. He won a load of trophies with a top club like at the same time John O'Shea did. He's a couple of years older than O'Shea. Like, why would we kind of appoint the French John O'Shea? It just seems like, what's the point?
You could get John O'Shea. You know, or we could just wait for John O'Shea to have like five underwhelming spells in charge of, you know, like spend 10 years in charge of four teams and do like grand, and then say, John O'Shea, you have now ascended to God tier. You can now you know manage the Ireland football team.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's obviously the example of Steve Staunton.
Yeah,
you know, who was appointed and I guess he was similar to O'Shea in the sense that he had more than 100 caps for Ireland. He played for big clubs. He hadn't had quite as successful a club career as O'Shea had. He came in with basically no managerial experience, and we know that it didn't go well. I think they're different people though as well. Just because it doesn't work for one person doesn't mean that it can't work for a different person. You know what I mean? You have like, look at Xabi Alonso and Steven Gerrard, right? We're talking about like two guys who similar age, same team for, you know, a big chunk of their
very
careers.
Very similar hairlines.
Yeah, I mean,
they both have three heads rather than four heads. You know, the hairline's just a little. Anyway, listen,
continue.
Please, Kit.
Both strong hairlines. One better than the other at being a manager. You know, it's just like not everybody is. And just because one guy with no experience doesn't do well doesn't mean that the next guy. And as O'Shea has said a few times, you know, he has been thinking about this for a long time and also has kind of been focused on this the outcome of becoming a manager consciously for many years and has been sort of studying things from different roles and blah, 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 blah. Like, I think he would definitely want the job. And the more, when I saw him kind of after the game the other night, I thought, this feels like it could work to me.
Ooh, after 1-0 all friendly, boy,
hey.
We were sucked in by the John O'Shea charm.
Stad beat Sweden 3-0 this first game.
Yeah.
I know, he did, yeah. We were all like, this is amazing. How did he sees tactics and colours?
I feel the FAI should be able to appoint somebody who has managed senior teams. But if they're incapable of doing that, you know, or somebody.
Willie Sanyal or John O'Shea?
Yeah, John O'Shea, probably.
See, none of this actually makes any sense. Do you know what I mean?
But Gus Poyet will be a lot higher on my radar than Willie Sanyal, purely because he did totally outfox us over two games recently.
Yeah.
And then talked amazingly about how great the fans are and all that kind of stuff.
Did he say your name in answering a question?
Probably.
He did. I mean, we talked to him.
So you would have Gus Poyet over John O'Shea?
Let's wait and see what happens Tuesday night.
Come on. Like, that's one a friendly total cop out. That's a total cop out.
Yeah, I would have Gus Poyet ahead of John O'Shea.
Would you? Okay.
Okay.
Well, at least you answered the question.
Yeah.
I mean,
eventually.
You're a disgrace, but fun.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Most sports nutrition experts would argue that the fueling begins, in fact, the most important element of it is the day before, particularly the night before. So if you could take us through your routine.
To win the Premier League, it's a war on nutrition.
Okay, well, the night before I had sort of a chicken salad.
Yeah, perfect.
Lovely, perfect.
I put a bit of pesto on. I mean, I put half a jar of
that's
pesto.
That's too much pesto, but it's not the end of the world.
Yeah. And I actually bulked up that chicken salad with a little bit of Israeli couscous.
We're still okay. We're still in the realms of pretty good nutrition, I would say, the day before a race.
I had two beers.
It's the best thing in the world for you because it's full of protein.
Okay, not ideal, but not the end of the world.
I had a small Pringles.
You know the Ritter Sport bars?
I hadn't seen cornflake one before.
Nobody had any soup to start with. Nobody had any puddings to finish with. They had fish and chips.
Okay, I had a whiskey and coke.
No, come on, not great. Not after the beers.
Well, it was a whiskey and coke zero.
You know, you probably know what direction I was thinking. We'll have another whiskey.
You could have one drink, no more, and then you're back to the hotel and you're off to bed.
Then I was thinking, what will I have?
You know what?
I'll have a cup of tea.
Okay. Perfect.
I had tea, then I had a few digestive biscuits.
Well, there was a suggestion that there was sort of an all-you-can-eat sort of a thing going on.
I wasn't counting them. They were like buns to an elephant. I was just hoovering them up. And then just before I went to bed, I had a slice of toast with Nutella.
No!
It was whole grain bread.
Well, while we were busy celebrating a 0-0 draw against Belgium, Germany had a big result, beating France 2-0 away from home. Archie Rintoud is on to chat a bit about this. Archie, how are you?
Good, thanks.
It wasn't that long ago we were hearing about the German national team being in crisis and, you know, unable to get these kind of results. Are they back? Are they going to win the Euros on home soil?
It's funny seeing how quickly the mood has changed here, in that before this game, there was so little talk about the Euros, just casually, I found amongst friends here. And now suddenly the major talk in Germany right now is, well, what's our goal music going to be in the summer? Like, there's a huge petition to get this new wave hit, Major Tom, Völlig losgelost.
That was used in the TV show. What was it called?
Yeah.
Deutschland
83.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, it just took one very good and convincing, stable performance to get people back on board. And great credit to Julian Nagelsmann for what he's done in the last few months to bring about these changes, because he's made a lot of changes as well. The fact that there were six new players named in the squad for these games against France and the Netherlands, and after what had been a disastrous pair of defeats against Turkey and Austria, many were demanding that big changes needed to be made. And Nagelsmann went away, thought about it, brought back Toni Kroos, which I think was the centerpiece of the success on Saturday. And there is new life about this Germany team, and I think a new mood of optimism, which really was not there in any form before Saturday night.
Can you tell us then a little bit about the changes Nagelsmann has made? He's in an interesting situation in the sense that he never planned to be the Germany coach at this point. He wasn't supposed to be. He's only there because things had gone south with Hansi Flick, and he happened to be available because things had gone wrong for him at Bayern. So maybe he came into the job a little bit bruised from that. Like, it was a bit humiliating for him what happened at Bayern. Obviously, he's got some of the same players in this Germany squad that he had with him at Bayern. But he seems to be winning people over. What's he done since he's actually come in?
He's demoted players from positions that worked for him at Bayern. I look at Joshua Kimmich being sent to right back, and how Captain Ilkay Gundogan I think it's noticeable that there is some tension between Gundogan and Kimmich. You might remember there was a tiff during the Champions League quarterfinal between Bayern and City last year, when in this era where you're always seeing players say hello to each other and everything seeming quite friendly, I think it was noticeable that actually Kimmich and Gundogan kind of went head to head there. And sorting out that central midfield, where Gundogan has been pushed forward more into a 10 and Kimmich has gone to right back, which Gundogan has said is where the team needs him most, which I think was a bit of a hair ruffle from Gundogan, is that's been important. Having somebody like Robert Andrich in the center of midfield, who is prepared to do the dirty work as well. And I think that's the bigger theme I draw here, is Nagelsmann has taken in-form players who have been doing it mainly for Bayer Leverkusen and Stuttgart in the Bundesliga, and said, I'm going to trust you to be more worker bee when you are playing for this team. He said quite damningly after the Austria game that he thought, Nagelsmann this is, he thought that there were too many individual fighters in the team and people just going on their own agenda, happy enough when they've played a nice pass. But he wanted more. He then said recently he wanted more people like Pascal Gross, who were going to maybe not have the utmost technical quality, but will bring more mentality. And I think that's what he's recognized by leaving out the likes of Gnabry, Goretzka, particularly the four Borussia Dortmund players he's chosen not to pick, Mats Hummels, Niklas Süle, Nico Schlotterbeck, Julian Brandt. These are players who have been struggling with themselves for form. And having that greater balance now in this team is something that has worked. And for so long, they've tried to cram too much in terms of names and personalities into this squad. And actually, you saw it when players were coming on during the game, that instead of feeling like, well, I should have started, it felt much more like, well, I'm quite happy to be here.
Nagelsmann himself has opened up a little, given a little bit of himself, I think, in the media. It was a few weeks back, last month, he talked about his father who died by suicide a long time ago, 16 years ago. But it turns out that his father was a spy.
Yeah. Yeah, this was a big surprise to read. He says he can't talk about exactly the details
or anything. Yeah,
but that was also quite something to read. And it's been known but never really discussed the circumstances in which Julian Nagelsmann's father died. And I think that. Nagelsmann as a character is somebody who comes across to a lot of people in football Germany, as they call it, as a bit of a smart ass, I think. Somebody who has all the answers, all the he's got his tactics, and is seen as being part of this laptop coach generation. That's how I would say the proper footballing men would describe him. And I think that he is somebody who has gone through a lot in his life already, and he's still in his 30s, and that he has been able to, I think, learn the lessons of Bayern so quickly. And I think tactically himself, he might recognize that he would try and go too attacking sometimes and want to shine in terms of by taking apart every opponent. And he's learned to be a bit more reserved. And to come back to the spy, to talking in this level of detail about himself in the press before the Euros, I think that he's recognized by taking this job, by giving the kind of at length interview that he did there with Spiegel, that this is a chance for him to change his image a bit in Germany and be seen as a little more down to earth than which I think he generally is. He does have a good level of social competence, as he puts it, but I think the Bayern job made him he got ridiculed for the skateboarding, the skiing, even if actually, I think a lot of things, as he would put it, were taken out of context.
And just in some of the stuff he was saying about his dad, he said his dad only ever told him a little bit about it. He wasn't allowed to talk about his job. That was also the reason why he often said it was all too much for him. There was no sharing of worries in his job. In the end, it put a lot of strain on him. Sorry, I know you wanted to come in just to give a bit of background to that one.
Yeah, well, I see now, Archie, that apparently the DFB have said... Bernd Neuendorf, who's the president of the German Football Federation, has said they're talking about extending Nagelsmann's contract. And I thought, wow, hang on a second. Good job and all as he's doing. I thought the whole idea here was that Germany would have a different manager for the World Cup in 2026, who's currently wrapping up a 9-year stint. I kind of had assumed this was apparently Julian Nagelsmann going to steal Jurgen Klopp's job that I for some reason assume he was always going to take. What do you think is going on here?
Nagelsmann said it would depend on what the offer is. In a little aside in his Saturday evening TV interview, I think that Nagelsmann still wants to go back into club management, but he's trying to play this as diplomatically as possible so as not to
offend everybody.
Even though he has said as well that he wants his future sorted before the Euros so that everybody knows what is going to happen. But I think it would help Nagelsmann when it comes to his future to know what's going on with this rumor to do with him going to Bayern, which has cropped up again.
Oh.
I still can't really see when I remember hearing from somebody well connected to the Bayern board that they saw him as arrogant. And the same figures around the Bayern board are still there, even if the people who didn't pull the trigger are not on Nagelsmann. So there's a host of jobs that you think he could take this summer. I would just be also surprised that they would veer away from the ideal choice in Jurgen Klopp because of his marketability in Germany, just how beloved he is by the everyman. And I think that that is the point of the national team as well, is you are trying to reach out to people who wouldn't ordinarily be watching football. And Jurgen Klopp does that like no other person in Germany, as I also know, because anytime I dare to walk outside my house, he is smiling there, trying to sell me beer, trying to sell me insurance. And it is, it's somehow unforeseeable to think that they would veer away from the long-term vision of Klopp, but perhaps it's the DFB as well, just trying to play a game of being like, we're enjoying this right now, and we want to show that, hey, we would be prepared. So I'd interpret this as a little game of poker.
Right. Well, they have been making some strange decisions recently. They have scandalized people. Well, some people are professing to be scandalized by the fact that they have abandoned Adidas, the German football team, which of course are synonymous with the three stripes, have forsaken Adidas because some other sportswear company offered them more money. But they've also got this situation happening where there was a pink, partially pink.
A pink away shirt.
Yeah. So what's the story? I mean, I can see that obviously this an argument of this similar kind of nature is convulsing England at the moment. But in Germany, there's been a major issues with this.
It's so similar actually to what is going on in the UK. I've struggled to differentiate between the two because politicians of every party, of each party in Germany, have come out and said that, you know, it's a disgrace. Even the vice chancellor, Robert Habeck, saying that he can't imagine a Germany shirt without the three stripes. And yet, looking back through history, you look at the first time Germany wore an Adidas shirt was in the final of the 1980 European Championships. So there has been an association with them wearing Adidas kit, but even then, it does have a huge significance. Like, let's not get that wrong. But also, I think for one of the first times ever, the German FA have come out of this looking pretty reasonable, because they're saying, look, Nike have offered us twice as much money as Adidas, and that is smart business when they are trying to put more money into grassroots football, more money into women's football. And it felt like bandwagon hopping here, into people generally have been upset with the German national team and the direction it's been taking and how corporate it is and how it lacks the organic nature that club football has. And it's why actually this petition to get the song played, Major Tom, I think is a huge opportunity for the German FA to make a simple win, because it's actually came out of an Adidas advert as well that came with the kit launch. But yeah, I would associate this furore that there's been over the shirt and Adidas, I'd file it in the woke agenda box, if that's the best way to put it.
Yeah, and just on that then, so we're not too far out now from the Euros. This win over France has obviously, as you said, gotten a few people excited about what's going to happen on the pitch. But the 2006 World Cup, I think, was seen as a great celebration. I know that was when you enjoyed, Ken. It was in Germany. It was, you know, it seemed to go very well, for want of a better term. Is there a sense that Germany in 2024, I mean, the world generally, but in this specific case, Germany, is too divided and maybe too angry for it to be just a simple, lovely celebration of football in the summer?
It's felt like that until this weekend.
Right.
When now people are starting to get excited. Because
if we win a game, I mean, if we win a game, it's completely different.
But it is kind of true, though, isn't it? If the host team goes through a tournament, it's suddenly everyone, you know, everything gets rewritten a little bit, and it's all part of this, oh yeah, we're all united narrative.
Yeah.
I think they won a game. They played very well, and that hasn't happened over 90 minutes in a few years. I think people are a little bit sick of the Bayern and Dortmund core of this squad, and to see it feeling a bit fresher with the the Leverkusen and Stuttgart players who have been playing such exciting football this season.
And the Arsenal player. Don't forget the Arsenal player. Of
course. Kai Havertz actually working as a number nine was perhaps the most shocking element, even if he's been doing it very well for Mikel Arteta in the last few weeks. But just on a national level outside of football, this year has been littered with train strikes, farmers striking, lorry drivers striking, huge protests against the rise and the presence of the AfD, the far right party here. And up to this point, everyone has just seemed so miserable, just wherever you go. And I've only seen like one piece of really sad bunting here in Cologne with all the European flags on it, which has made me think, oh yes, the Euros are coming. Mm. So I think that actually the mood with the national team has made even advertisers a bit wary of, we don't want to lay it on too thick early, because people don't really like the national team right now. And I think there's been a struggle to identify with many characters in it. Joshua Kimmich was always presented as being this, you know, this next big thing, this next big player. And yet I don't think that he's somebody who is seen as being particularly likable to the everyman. And actually seeing players rise up in a slightly out of a slightly less fancied background, less fancied clubs, I would say, I think is attractive. And having people feel like Germany is, even if they are not an underdog, when you see the amount of Champions League appearances that many of their players have, I think that it's helping to give this whole attempt to freshen things up before the Euros a good feel. And there is hope once again here, given after many months of misery. Albeit, I would say, don't rule out the train strikes ruining many people's Euros, because or indeed train services, because people might be in for a shock in how good German train services actually are.
Right, we'll watch out for that. Country. Archie, great stuff. Thanks, Emil.
Thanks, cheers.
FIFA made a movie recently.
Did they? John Delaney could run anything.
They did, actually.
About themselves?
Yeah, about themselves.
God, that's ego, isn't it?
He could run FIFA. Certainly better than Sepp Blatter.
Yeah, that's incredible ego, but the real movie's on its way.
Yeah, I'm off to see the Queen tomorrow too, don't forget that.
No, don't forget that.
In 2009, I called him an embarrassment to FIFA and an embarrassment to himself. And I said it to him across the table, just like I'm talking to you. We wanted two expletives. He said, no one speaks to me like that.
And you said?
And I said, well, I do. And that was it. We wanted two expletives. And I just asked her to move on. It was an extraordinary moment. She was here, she'd tell you, just stared at her for 7 or 8 seconds. And I said, move on now, please. And then he moved. When I went in and told him how I felt about him, and there were some expletive views, we came to an agreement. It's a very good agreement, Cliff, and you've used the figure there. Well done to you.
Got an email in here from William Murphy, reading through a few pages of Professor of Marketing and Psychology Adam Alter's book, Anatomy of a Breakthrough, last night.
Nonsense.
When I got to a chapter which began with reference to Lionel Messi, this piqued my interest, so I continued. And to my great surprise, a couple of pages in, I happened upon a reference to, well, Murph, maybe you can read out the...
Ken Early?
Yes.
Wow. You'd like me to read out
the passage here, yeah. I mean, it was going to build up to the Ken Early part, but anyway. Yeah.
If you split soccer gameplay into preparatory and engaged components, Messi leans heavily on preparation. During one classic game between Messi's Barcelona and arch-rivals Real Madrid, I wish they'd go with arch-rival, you know, as they do in all the other American books. Anyway, in 2017, Messi ran for just 4 minutes and walked for more than 80 of the game's 90 minutes. When he was engaged, though, he was dynamic, creating 9 chances, scoring 1 goal, and feeding the ball to a teammate who scored another goal. That pattern isn't unusual for Messi, and it's often in the biggest games that he accentuates his in-game preparation. That preparation also explains his ability to find himself in the right place at the right time, over and over. Though his positional play appears otherworldly, it isn't a miracle. It's that he's learned, minute by minute, that a particular defender leaves a particular square of pitch uncovered, or that two midfielders leave a small corner of the pitch open when they gravitate to the middle of the field. The quote begins. surely it must mean something, mused Irish soccer commentator Ken Early. Surely it must mean something that the best player in the fastest era of football hardly ever runs at all. Something to muse about, all right, isn't it?
Wow. Is this my most profound ever thought?
Well, I made it into a book.
I mean, I'm just thinking, what is it, a marketing book? Imagine, Owen, try and line up all of the words written about Lionel Messi in his marketing football career. It's side by side.
Yeah.
And just like drape that around the globe however many times you like. Yeah. And yet, when it comes to Adam Alder, he's found Messi's entire career distilled into one singular musing.
Surely it must
by
mean
our sports
something.
Commentator Ken Early.
Yeah, I remember the game, and it was guess who was playing in the game, which prompted me to form that golden droplet of insight.
Well, Lionel Messi for a start, Argentina for another.
You mean what other player?
Yeah, well, who team player? Whoever.
Was he playing against Ireland?
He was playing against Switzerland, now.
Yeah.
Fabian Scher.
Wow.
Maybe the Scher Bear will be there tomorrow night. You know, my muse.
Why do you care so much? Why Fabian Scher has got to mention that. This is your third mention of the Fabian Scher.
Fabian Scher, he was playing in that game against Messi, the Argentina-Switzerland second round match in the World Cup in 2014.
Yeah.
And Argentina won with a really late goal in extra time by Di Maria. I think it was extra time. And poor old Fabian Scher played a really good game. And ever since then, I've said, that guy's some footballer.
Well, we might see
Fabian
that.
Fabian Scher.
Tomorrow night, and you might hear us talk about it if you're signed up to the World Series.
Get your tickets, everyone, for the Fabian Scher show.
Available as single tickets now.
Sorry, but Fabian Scher, the last time he was here, do you not remember what he did?
No.
You don't remember Fabian Scher?
No, absolutely not. We don't.
He pulverized us with a slammed him through our defense and slammed it into the net. You don't remember this, Fabian Scher? Fabian Scher scored a great goal against Ireland.
What year are we talking?
Mick
about?
McCarthy's second coming.
Oh, come on! I've memory holed that entire period of time, and I'm glad I have. If one of the casualties of that particular memory holding was Fabian Scher's most golden moment in a Switzerland jersey, then I'm sorry. Fair enough.
Fabian Scher.
Thanks, Ken.
Thanks, Alan.
Thanks, Murph.
Thank you, Ciarán.
Thank you, Ken. Thank you, Owen.
Thanks for listening. Sign up today to hear more coverage of the John O'Shea era and the World Service, which is set to run and run, according to Ken. All episodes available without any ads. If you're a member, Second Campus Podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
What phone is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's World Service.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's the persuasion of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.